You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Stugatz, I don't know how much you have kept up with the Chicago Blackhawks scandal because it is granular. The investigation that the NHL has done is pretty thorough. It's 140 witness interviews. You've got a lot of information over 5 months being gathered. And now everyone who was in power with the 2010 Chicago Blackhawks is out in the executive ranks. Nobody in the organization is still working there. And there is a victim left behind of sexual abuse and structural failure in the organization to protect somebody from a coach who was a predator. So Mark Lazarus has been on top of this story, senior writer for The Athletic. He covers the Blackhawks. Thank you, Mark, for joining us. For those who haven't been following the details on what happened here, can you sort of, before we get into how abhorrent it is and how something like this can possibly happen as a structural breach in leadership, can you just take people through a blow-by-blow account of some of what has happened here over the last 6 months or so in an investigation of something from 2010?
Yeah, sure. I'll try to give you the Cliff Notes version. I mean, this is based on, you know, the there's two lawsuits facing the Blackhawks right now. One from a former Blackhawk from that 2010 team, a Black Ace, and one from a former student in Houghton, Michigan, who in 2013 was sexually assaulted by Brad Aldrich, who was the Blackhawks video coach in 2010. Aldrich pled guilty to that one, so that's a conviction. The 2010 Blackhawks one, this surfaced in about May, but the main story is, and this is based on the interviews done by Jenner and Block, the independent law firm who investigated this on the Blackhawks' dime, was in May of 2010, Brad Aldrich, the video coach, sexually assaulted a Blackhawks player, or had a non-consensual sexual event, I think is how he phrased it. And this was brought to Blackhawks' attention on May 23rd, within an hour of them winning the Western Conference Final in San Jose. They swept the Sharks in Game 4. Within an hour, there was a meeting where this was brought to the attention of President John McDonough, General Manager Stan Bowman, Assistant General Manager Jay Blunk was in there, and Al McIsaac, Joel Quenneville, the head coach, was in there. That was a new revelation yesterday. Kevin Cheveldayoff, an assistant GM, who's now the general manager of the Winnipeg Jets, was in there. And basically, it was decided to sit on it for a few weeks because it was going to get in the way of them potentially winning the Stanley Cup. So 3 weeks after that, after the playoffs had ended, after the parade, after Brad Aldrich celebrated in the presence of John Doe, the victim of the Blackhawks, according to the investigation, he was quietly let go. And, you know, he went on to have jobs in other places, including that volunteer assistant job at Houghton High School in Michigan, where he sexually assaulted a minor. And that is the crux of this, is the Blackhawks allowed that to happen by not reporting this to authorities properly and just quietly letting him go. And that's where we stand now.
And how much blame is there to go around here when you see a $2 million fine for the organization? You've got the shame of it as well. You've got damage being done here to somebody who may have trusted authority figures, the culture, the organization, leadership. So you put the blame where?
Well, there's plenty of blame to go around. Everyone in that room deserves some blame. I mean, these were grown men. These were adults. And all of them cowed. You know, according to the report, John McDonough, who was the heavy-handed president of the team, that he was fired about a year and a half ago for other reasons, just internal politics, things like that. He ran the Blackhawks with an iron fist. So there, a lot of the blame is falling at his feet. But the fact remains that nobody stood up to him. Nobody said, no, we have to report this. This is unacceptable. The team as a whole, the entire corporate structure of the Blackhawks, basically decided to put winning ahead of, you know, basic human decency and protecting the well-being of one of their own players. So, I mean, 2010 to 2015, the Blackhawks won 3 Stanley Cups. This is the golden age of Blackhawks hockey, one of the original 6 franchises of the NHL, a storied franchise with, you know, almost 100 years of history. This was the best run they've ever had, the golden age, and it's forever tarnished now because they put winning you know, above protecting their own and protecting future people in other hockey organizations throughout the Midwest. I mean, it's, you know, the farther you get, the deeper you wade into the granular details of this, and the Jenner and Block report is available online. I would caution people that there's a lot of, you know, sensitive content in there that you might not want to read. But the angrier you get about how a professional sports team put, as Danny Wirtz, the new CEO of the team, who was not around in 2010, put it, they put team performance above everything else.
Mark, I read the report last night, and it was truly one of the most sickening things that I've ever read. And I have been a Blackhawks fan my whole life, so it's even, I feel like, worse, because, like you said, it was the golden age of hockey. And I'm wondering if the Wirtz family understands, like, the magnitude of this and how fans are going to really have to regain trust to even like this team anymore. Like, it's really hard right now to even admit I'm a Blackhawks fan.
I mean, how a lot of fans are going through that. Season tickets are down a little bit. The sellout streak ended. You can blame that on COVID. You can blame that on the fact that the team is 0-5-1, but they had sold out 535 consecutive games, and that's over as of their last game. But yeah, there are fans everywhere that are turning in season tickets. They're grappling with their fandom. How do you square your fandom? Something that brought you so much joy, you know, has some of your best memories of your life are with your family, with your friends, with your parents, your kids, watching this team win. And now you have to square that with the fact that, you know, everyone who is running that team allowed this to happen. And we have to wonder about the players too. I mean, Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, that whole 2010 team, they said Toews told me over the summer that he didn't know about it until the following fall at training camp when word started getting around. I've had other players say everybody knew. Patrick Kane said he didn't know about it. There's, as Reed Schar, the Jenner and Block investigator, put it, wildly varying accounts of a lot of this. So there's going to be some questions here. But if you're a fan, you have to grapple with, and we see this in sports all the time, right? My wife's a Cubs fan, and she had trouble with the 2016 World Series because Aroldis Chapman was on the hill when it was won. That soured it for her. And now Blackhawks fans have to deal with that and figure out, you know, if this team, and to their credit, they're doing the right thing. They fired everybody. Danny Wirtz has come in. He said all the right things. He apologized on behalf of the organization. He's instructed the lawyers to settle with the two lawsuits, even though he says they have a legal case. They're going to stop with the lawyering and statutes of limitations, all that. They're doing and saying all the right things, but they're doing and saying all the right things 11 years too late.
You mentioned earlier that no one stepped up and said something. In your mind, who should have stepped up and said something?
Everybody in that room. I mean, John McDonough was the president of the Blackhawks, and he ruled that franchise more than maybe any executive I've ever encountered. Like, he should have said something, but so should have Stan Bowman. So should have Kevin Cheveldayoff. So should have, you know, every single person in that room. These were not children. And, you know, Stan Bowman put out a statement. I was a first-year GM, and I trusted my supervisor. No, you don't get to pass the buck. Nobody in that room gets to pass the buck on this. You are all fully functioning grown adults in a room that heard a horrible thing and decided to sit on it and do nothing. And that's the legacy of that executive suite now.
You mentioned that Joel Quenneville, we learned this yesterday, he is at the front of the hockey team here in South Florida. You said we learned that yesterday. What else did we learn yesterday with the NHL investigation that had not been known?
Well, I mean, the big ones were that Quenneville and, like I said, Kevin Cheveldayoff, the GM of the Winnipeg Jets, were in that room. We didn't know. We knew about that meeting. Paul Vincent had brought that forward, and we knew about that meeting, but we got the full details of it. And again, we have to clarify everything. The investigation said that there were wildly varying accounts, but this is the conclusion that they drew, is that these people were in that meeting. Quenneville and Cheveldayoff are both going to be meeting with Gary Bettman, the NHL commissioner, in the near future to discuss that. I don't know if there will be punishments for them. It's I don't know how the league is going to legislate this. I mean, handing the Blackhawks a $2 million fine, that's a drop in the bucket to Rocky Wirtz, who's a, you know, multi-billionaire owner of the team. But the people that have been fighting, Stan Bowman and John McDonough and Al McIsaac, these guys have been with the Blackhawks for so long. They're gonna have to apply for reinstatement through Gary Bettman directly if they ever want to be in the NHL again. And I honestly don't know if any team would ever sign them again. And Stan Bowman's a 3-time Stanley Cup winning GM. In theory, his last name is Bowman. I mean, he would have a job for life in the NHL. But now I wonder if he'll ever work again.
What's going to happen, though, now that they're being called into Bettman, given that they, over the offseason, there were denials publicly that they knew anything, and now the investigation, it's not just that they did it, it's that it would appear that, is there another way to look at that other than to say the investigation has proved that they're not telling the truth?
It's hard to look at it any other way, you're right. And I don't know, the league has, you know, Gary Bettman has dictatorial powers to do basically whatever he wants to anyone who works in the NHL. So he can suspend Joel Quenneville and Kevin Cheveldayoff. I don't think he can kick them out of the league. I don't think that's going to happen, but it's a huge story. I mean, Joel Quenneville's the second winningest coach of all time. He's going to win his 1,000th game this year, which is a huge deal. Only Scotty Bowman's ever done that. Stan's dad. And, you know, the Panthers are one of the great stories in the league this year. They're maybe the best team in the league. And, you know, Florida, a market that's been starving for good hockey for so long, lying dormant, waiting to be resurrected, now has this hanging over their head. I mean, you know, what does this mean for Joel Quenneville? What does this mean for the Panthers? The tentacles of this stretch across the entire NHL, and very few teams are going to be, you know, untouched. The general manager of the Montreal Canadiens is Mark Bergevin. He was an assistant GM of the Blackhawks back then. He was not named in the report. It seems like his denials have some validity to them, but there's going to be questions now for everyone who is ever affiliated with that team, one of the great teams of the modern era.
What's going to happen to Quenneville? What should happen to Quenneville? Because you're saying the powers that Bettman has, but I don't seem to understand at all what might happen here.
I think a suspension of some sort would probably be fining him is not going to be sufficient to a lot of people. But at the same time, you know, if you're the head coach of the team and you're in a room with a bunch of executives, what is your responsibility there? And again, this is the sliding scale that we're talking about with McDonough and Bowman and then McIsaac. And then what happens when you get down to Joel Quenneville? What is his responsibility there? And then there are a lot of disturbing things in the lawsuits about homophobic bullying to this player in years to come, because everybody knew about it and people were saying horrible things to him on the ice, off the ice, you know, the psychological damage that must have been done. And then there's also this minor victim in Michigan that you know, basically would never have happened if the Blackhawks had reported Brad Aldridge to authorities. So there's certainly grounds to suspend Joel Quenneville. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't think the Florida Panthers are going to fire him over this. I mean, this happened 11 years ago on another franchise. I don't know what you do. It's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out, because Bettman can do pretty much whatever he wants. But Joel Quenneville is a really big name in this sport, and he's on the verge of a huge milestone, and he's the coach of a great team. And I don't know, does he get suspended? Does he get, you know, kicked out of the league? It's hard to envision some of those things happening, but it's all on the table right now.
So one of the things in the report about John Doe was the way that Aldrich allegedly threatened his future in hockey and basically, you know, got him to trust him and just told him he wouldn't have a career unless he complied, and all of these like awful things. And like you mentioned, the bullying afterwards from players who maybe had heard about it or knew about it. And I'm wondering like how much of this inaction and Quenneville maybe not really realizing the magnitude or not saying anything at the time and the focus on the Blackhawks playoffs and the Stanley Cup, how much of this has to do with like the culture in hockey? And is there like a cultural change that needs to happen in these organizations around these allegations?
Oh, absolutely. And that's a great question, because hockey is still, you know, hockey is probably it's weird because hockey is one of the more progressive sports in terms of the You Can Play project. Hockey is for everyone. You see guys wearing, you know, pride tape on their sticks, and they have all these, you know, the Stanley Cup has been at gay pride parades, all these things. But it's also this dinosaur of a sport run by people that are, you know, from a different era, dinosaurs that played in the 70s and 80s. And it's a backward sport. And it's the whole culture, the whole point of hockey, right, is you subsume the individual for the sake of the team. You never say I, you say we. All those hacky cliches, you know, they're true in hockey. And this is an example of that, is the words they use, they didn't want to affect the team chemistry. That was one of the reasons those executives had for sitting on this information for a few weeks, was they were about to go to the Stanley Cup final and they didn't want to affect team chemistry. That's the hockiest thing I've ever heard, is that, you know, protecting a player on your team could affect team chemistry. And it's true. You know, people think that this is just a video coach. What could he have done? Video coaches hold tremendous power for younger players, like John Doe was. He was a black ace. He was playing for the Rockford IceHogs for most of that year. You know, the video coach is the one who cuts all the clips to put in front of the coaching staff. He can really frame your career in a lot of ways. Look, this player is good. Look, this player is bad. The video coach has a lot of power. So, you know, the John Doe had good reason to fear Brad Aldrich's power over his career. He was young. He was trying to break into the NHL. And here's a guy who holds his career in the palm of his hands, telling, if you don't do this, I'm going to ruin you. And, you know, it's not the hockey way to stand up and speak out. I'm hoping that changes. We're seeing some positive moves but you go back to last year and George Floyd and the aftermath of that, hockey was terrible at it. All the other, you know, the WNBA and the NBA and, you know, a lot of these sports were leading the way, and hockey was just making it up as they went along, kind of, you know, soft shoeing their way through it and trying to come up with, you know, ways to look good but not offend their largely white conservative fan base. And NHL is like golf. It's all white and it's all conservative. You know, it's hockey is a long way to go in earning the credibility and the progressive thought that other sports have right now. And maybe this is a flashpoint for that. Like I mentioned, Danny Wirtz, he took over as CEO after John McDonough was fired, and he's the son of the owner of the team. So he's a Blackhawks legacy, but he's also new to this. He wasn't affiliated with the 2010s. He's a younger guy. He's a progressive, forward thinking guy. And I think with him at the helm, there's hope. You know, they're putting all these initiatives forward to kind of bring the Blackhawks into the light. And, you know, they're doing a land acknowledgement before games now. This is a team that has a cartoon Indian as its logo. We have to wonder how long that's going to last for. But there are reasons to believe the Blackhawks are headed in the right direction. And this was a big step in that process. But it doesn't change the fact that five months ago they were saying, oh, there's no credibility to these accusations at all. There's a long way to go.
What about the damage done, Mark? Because in these instances, we talk about blame and who should go. And so they clean house, and maybe it doesn't happen again next time, but can you humanize the damage done here? Can you humanize the victims?
Well, that's just it. I mean, we get fixated on the hockey of all this, but there was a child in Michigan who had his life altered forever because the Blackhawks didn't report this to authorities. There is a hockey player on the Blackhawks, a member of the Chicago Blackhawks, who had his life altered forever because of this, you know, years of therapy and trying to work through this and repressed memories. And, you know, I've had former Blackhawks players, I'm obviously not going to name names here, but say, you know, they have children that have been sexually abused in other areas of life, and they can't, and the anger they feel towards a team that you once loved, that was their family, it's hard to describe. I mean, this is an unforgivable sin. You can do what you can to make sure it never happens again, but nothing washes this away. Nothing makes it right. The fact that they're going to settle these lawsuits doesn't make it okay. So there's a real human cost to this inaction by the Blackhawks, this hockey inertia, to just this drive to put winning above all else, that is going to be felt by these people forever. And, you know, Brad Aldrich, we've done a lot of reporting on this. Everywhere he went, there's a pattern. He grooms young players. He becomes a little too friendly with them. And then he goes down in this direction everywhere he's been. The Blackhawks could have prevented that by just saying, don't ever hire this guy. They never really did that.
We'll let you out on this note. For those listening, just are there details that we have missed that you find particular, not just from the investigation, but from all your reporting on this, that people ought to see so that they understand how something like this happens, the discomforts around the adults being able to talk about it? We've seen it happen at Penn State. We don't know whether the cultures are responsible for this or not, but what details are we missing that the audience needs to hear on what happened to these young men?
Well, I mean, you can read the 100-some-odd pages of the Jenner and Block report if you want those details. It's disturbing. It's upsetting. But the what it comes down to is you have to decide, as did the Blackhawks pay the, did Stan Bowman pay a fair price? He won, his name is on the Stanley Cup three times. Was that worth what he did? His name is on the Stanley Cup just above Brad Aldrich's forever. That leg, they're forever linked and forever tarnished together. And you have to decide, you know, if when future executives are in this situation, is the now worth the risk down the road? Because this never happens immediately, right? It took 11 years for this to happen. We can't overstate that. It took 11 years for justice of any sort to happen here. And I'd still wonder if in that position, you know, hyper-competitive, very well-compensated executives make the same decision again or not. I'm sure this is not the last one of these stories we'll all be writing about, and that's really unfortunate.
Mark, thank you for sharing your information and for the work that you've done on this story.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. That was
Mark, thank
that
you.
That was excellent.
Yeah, it was great.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate the questions.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Have a good one.
Is that a Chicago thing?
Have a good one? Yeah, I don't really hear that all that often. So I guess
have a good one?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Have a good one?
Someone told me once that's like a Chicago-ism. Have a good one.
Yeah. Don't hear that.
You just said it, and then I said it.
Have a good one.
We both said it.
I have this theory that most people will just repeat a greeting that someone else will say to them because it's like a nervous tick. So like you could say almost anything and you'll probably say that right back to them. So like howdy. You might say, hey, howdy. Because it's just like, especially if you get caught off guard, you might
say something. So howdy's met with a howdy?
Possibly, yeah.
Really?
Especially if you're like crossing someone like very quickly and you catch them off guard. Like, hey, howdy. You're like, oh, howdy.
What if you get one of Roy's,
Oh, hey.
Or a huh.
All right. As a show, for a week, let's all just pick a thing that we're going to say to another person. And then whenever we go to greet them, just stick to that thing and see how many times they say back whatever that unique thing is.
Okay. So we want to do this for the remainder of this week, or do we want to, what do you want to do here? I'm going to go yo-yo.
Yo-yo.
So when I walk by someone, I'm just going to be like, yo-yo.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm gonna say, can I get a what?
Ooh, all right, new game. Instead of for a week,
can I get a what? Hold on, let's write these down so we'll make sure. Okay.
So I'm gonna be like, can I get a what? And you're gonna, I guarantee you, 80% of the time, be like, what?
Right. I'm not gonna respond what?
You might.
No, but I don't think I will.
Well,
okay.
Maybe a what?
Mike, do you envision yourself when I walk past you and I say yo-yo?
Yeah, I'm gonna say yo-yo. Can I get a what?
Well,
really? Yeah, you're going to give me my yo-yo and follow up with a what?
Can I get a what?
Holy shit.
Slam a lam a ding dong.
It's going to be hard for me.
Why don't we do this?
Okay.
And because a week's a long time. Why don't we do this? We have a big meeting today.
Right.
No one's aware of this, but we have a big meeting today.
Uh-huh.
Why don't we all have our unique salutations for the people who are visiting today, and then see how many of those get repeated back.
You have me walking past Skipper going, yo, yo.
Yeah.
I cannot wait to ask him if I can get a what.
Yeah.
Do you have any other nominees here as the executives come in to do whatever it is that the executives are going to do around here?
I'll give him a sup.
Ooh.
Sup.
I don't think you're going to get a sup back.
Wait, so Jess is staking sup. Okay. Hold
yes,
on.
I think. Is there all an apostrophe right, so before that? There is an apostrophe before the sup.
Can what
I
up,
get,
bro?
I'm glad I locked in. Can I get a what?
Yeah, like I'm jealous.
Things are going quick now.
Roy, what
no
was yours?
One is coming back at you with bro.
Try it though.
You
try
think
it though.
You, ooh, dangerous game.
Yeah. Try it.
Home skillet. Yeah.
Walk by Skip today and just bro.
Give him a what's cooking.
What's cooking? That's good.
What's cooking?
All right, we'll do that. What's cooking?
What's cooking?
Are you officially taking what's cooking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm starting to have immediate regret over can I get a what?
Yeah.
I'm excited for sup.
Home skillet.
Wait, so Mike has, Mike, what is yours again?
Can I get a what?
All right, Mike has a what? I have a yo-yo. Roy has a
what's cooking.
And Jess has a sup.
Yes.
We need one for Billy and Mike.
Yeah. Well, no, Mike has
I mean,
one.
Billy and Dan, excuse me. Yeah.
Yeah, Dan, what do you want?
Hey.
Nice. No. Hey.
I think that you might get a hey. No, three is too far. What? Three no, is one Fat hey Albert. Too far.
Three is Fat Albert.
Hey.
No, that's the way from what's happening.
Yeah, Fat Albert is hey.
Yeah.
Are you going hey or hey?
Set my three consecutive.
I don't think we can do three hays in.
I think what's happening is hey.
Yeah, it's hey.
So Dan has.
I have one for Billy.
Okay.
Hey.
Hidey ho.
I don't think I'm going to be doing that.
You sing it like you're like at a sporting event, like the organ player.
Cab Calloway.
Mm.
Billy should be really long.
But the thing is I'm trying to get it back.
The Billy I know would conceive this entire game and then go, I'm going to go high.
Yeah,
no. I'm kind of maybe just like a head nod. Do you think you get a head nod back?
Yeah, the old nod.
What about
yeah.
salutations?
A formal salutation.
Witty already does that.
He does, yeah.
That's how Witty says good morning.
He can't help it.
Greetings.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Sup is off the board.
Sup is gone.
Yeah.
Yo. Yeah.
What's happening?
What about howdy?
I could do howdy, I guess.
Howdy's
you
good.
Got howdy.
Top of the howdy.
Morning. Billy is howdy.
Top of the morning.
But it's
going to
be an afternoon thing.
Yeah, it's going to be afternoon.
Yeah.
Good evening.
I
did that at a barbershop once in Spanish. They quickly corrected me and said, it's not the morning. I said, sorry.
You said top of the morning in Spanish?
Well, no, I just said buenos dias. And they're like, buenas tardes. And I was like, sorry.
Oh, wow.
Perdón.
Chris Whittingham's over there.
Yeah.
I love Billy.
Actually, the morning ends at noon.
I love the barbershop.
Tell them to get over themselves.
I love the barbershop taking his confidence as soon as he walks in. It's just like, here are my first words and a correction.
Well, I also said it to the room, which is very out of character for me, but it's a common practice where you walk in and you say, hello,
wait,
to the entire room. Yeah.
I cannot imagine you doing this. You walked into the barbershop
never do it again.
Swaggering, buenos dias.
Well, no. So, Jesus. Like, I walked in.
Terrible Spanish.
How are you not better at that after 20 years in Miami? How is it?
Miami. I live in Orlando.
How is it possible?
O-Town.
So I walked in, and it was just like an awkward thing, right? And then it's always kind of like, I'm just waiting I don't want to be there, but I'm just waiting to see like who's available, and I'll just go and be out of there as quickly as possible, because like that's just my experience with haircuts. I'm not a fan. So they're just looking at me. So I'm like, well, I better say something. So I'm like, I know that in the past, every time someone walks in, they say hello to the entire room and it goes well. So I, you know, said, buenos dias. And it was like maybe like 1:15. It was like an hour after the DS was still applicable, you know?
You strike me as someone, though, correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't know what your haircut habits are, but I imagine you to be a loyal customer, that you would be going to the same place for a long time, and so you're not often walking into a place that's new, that you actually know some of the people.
You're half right. I do go to the same place, but it's not like I go every 2 weeks, right? So they probably know me as like, that's the weird person that comes in here like every like month and a half to 6 months, depending on how groomed I am that year. And then they are like, that's the weirdo, like who doesn't want right. him, and who's going to be available. And you know like how sometimes you look around and you're like, who's the first person available? Sometimes I feel like when I walk in, all of a sudden people just start sweeping. And they become unavailable.
Right. Want nothing to do with you.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah. Same barber or?
No, that's the thing. Sometimes they just get the urge to sweep when I walk in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have to go to the same barber. I have to.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Put it on the poll. If the barbers start sweeping as soon as you come in every time, do the barbers not like you?
Because, I don't know why. I don't say anything.
No, but this is what I love about you getting stripped down as soon as you walk in. I love that you open the door, you jangle.
Well, I keep my clothes.
It's got a bell jangling as you walk in my imagination, and the chairs are red and they're barber chairs from 1980 in a certain kind of South Florida. And as you walk in, the barbers start sweeping, and then you try to be friendly through whatever the awkwardness is with buenos dias, and they all look up from their brooms.
Yeah,
and
they run from
and
brooms
and correct
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing.
They clip his confidence before his hair.
Mm-hmm. It's so wrong.
I saw this viral post, I think it was on TikTok the other day, where a person said they went to a hairdresser for the first time and they handed them a robe. And so she went in the bathroom and didn't realize the robe goes over her clothes. So she took off all her clothes and was naked underneath the hairdresser's robe.
Completely naked. Why would that be necessary?
Treating it like the doctor.
That's someone who's just doing what they're told. Not like that, really, not giving any thought. There are thought experiments done on this sort of stuff. Like, people will follow. You might be able to trick 10 people into doing that before anybody does something different.
That's why I'm saying there's like a 60% chance I get a howdy back today.
Well, howdy seems safer than all the ones that we're doing.
Brian's
not getting any. What bro, bro?
What's
like
cooking?
What was that? No, he did what's a bro, cooking? Bro.
No, but he's got what's cooking. Yeah, Mike's got what.
No, but
you have hey.
But Roy had something on the front end of bro, bro.
What a bro, bro. Of course, this does not apply to women that may show up here.
Well, what are you going with?
That's not equality,
what's
Roy.
Cooking? Yeah. No, it's
I
not.
I feel like in Miami, okay. Bro is gender neutral. Miami bro is totally gender neutral. You got the bro sandwiches here. It starts with bro, ends with bro. It does.
Right. I hung out with Lewis and Tony for a little bit yesterday after work. I've never heard so many bros in my life.
Oh,
just
they
back
love
and forth.
Yeah.
They just say bro to each other, and it's a whole conversation just with the word bro.
Right. They don't say anything else. Bro, bro, bro.
But you'll learn that bro means different things. It's not like just one use for the word.
It's like buffalo, 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 but it's just bro, 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 bro,
bro. Bro.
That's a whole sentence.
Bro.
Do you say buffalo a lot?
That's
I don't
fire,
know.
Bro.
No, buffalo, there's like a buffalo. Buffalo, buffalo, buffalo is a complete sentence because buffalo is a noun, adjective, verb, and you can make a sentence of just the word buffalo.
So is bro. Bro is all of those things in
yeah, you can bro can be a verb. I'm broing out.
Yeah. Did anyone bro? Did anyone picture Skipper saying what's cooking and like immediately smile? Because I did.
What's cooking, bro, bro?
What's cooking?
What?
Which one is he most likely to say? Howdy.
Howdy. Yeah. I mean, howdy's yeah, safe. Howdy. Billy got in here, lobbed the grenade in here.
In fact, I think Skipper greets you by saying howdy. Like, he does already, I would imagine.
So should I tip my cap also?
Yeah, tip of the cap with a howdy.
More difficult.
Yeah.
Or a curtsy.
A tip of the cap to you would be a good formal introduction if you want to make it awkward. Howdy is you getting off easy. Yeah. Howdy,
you guys gave me howdy. I was up for suggestions. All right, I don't think Skipper's ever going to have to.
Do the Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Like that bow.
Oh, I thought you meant like the DX. Yeah.
No.
Like the Duke?
Water bottles. No, just like the very fancy bow.
Yeah, when he was what the Duke? He was the Duke of something, right?
Yeah, the way that a villain would in like a Disney movie.
Yeah.
Ooh. Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer. Howdy, folks. It's Mike Ryan. I'm living the gimmick right now. The playoffs have already gotten me, and we're a couple of days into it. It's like a playoff equinox that's going on right now. It's ridiculous. And if you're like me, you like rooting on your team. Trust me. I just bought 3 for my wife, daughter, and myself for game 1. I live it. Because I've been out there. I've been out in those streets. I've been panicking last second trying to find deals. And then when I eventually settle on something, I'm not sure if it's the lowest price out there. And I'm getting just totally blitzed with surprise fees. Well, thankfully, Game Time takes it out of the equation. All the fees are up front. There's no surprises. You get to see what your seat looks like. It's amazing the technology we have these days. But Game Time has your back always. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app right now, create an account, and use code DAN for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code DAN for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute deals, lowest price, guaranteed.
Don Libertard.
And finally, Fruit Loops are all the same flavor, just different colors. I refuse to believe that.
Is that right?
I refuse to believe it. I mean, try the grapefruit loop and tell me that doesn't taste different than the cherry one, because it does. I love Fruit Loops.
Stugatz.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Did you know that all of Fruit Loops were the same flavor, just different colors?
Refuse to believe it.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
Stugatz, did you see the ESPN.com headlines? Because it was one after another. We haven't talked about the World Series here at all, but it was Rob Manfred sitting out the chop in Atlanta. It was Roger Goodell saying the Washington football team investigation, that the report will not be released, that we're not going to see any of what it is that is being investigated in Washington. You've got Cal McNair. Why is it always you, Cal? Cal McNair, son of Bob McNair, apologizing for using the China virus. His father a few years ago said was owning the team and said, you can't let the inmates run the prison, when referring to the employees. And it was just one after another, no matter how much people want to get away from some of this stuff and retreat to sports. Sports is going to have some of it. The commissioners are not getting any better at addressing it. Like, Stugatz, I'm not kidding you. 30 years ago, outside Atlanta, Minnesota World Series, talking to Native Americans who were protesting about this kind of stuff, the chop and the name. Manfred still got no better an answer. His quotes were embarrassing. He's like, I need it. It's important. We've got 30 markets, is what he said. Like, he just didn't have anything.
Right.
And here's Roger Goodell about a Washington investigation that had somehow ensnared John Gruden and $10 million in fines in Washington. And Daniel Snyder is off to the side. His wife is kind of running the team, but he's not running the team.
There's a lot of information here missing. And when the NFL does an investigation, we have a lot more information. And there was a really good question being asked of Roger Goodell at this press conference. And Roger Goodell's answer was disappointing, as it all too often is.
Based on the fact that you guys produced, you know, 250 pages on Tom Brady, 150 pages on Richie Incognito, and 100 pages on Ray Rice, why is it that there isn't a written report on what happened with the Washington football team and the investigation you guys did into that?
As you know, there was a summary of the findings. We had an independent counsel look at that. They worked on it almost a year. I think interviewed over roughly 150 people, and I think close to 6 million documents that they worked through. But one of the important things by getting a professional that has worked in this space was making sure that you had people who were willing to come forward, most of which wanted to do so with security and privacy and anonymity, and it would be difficult for us to do that. And that not only affects the investigation that you're going through, but it affects future investigations and the credibility of that. So when you make a promise to protect anonymity, you need to stand by that. We're very conscious of making sure that we're protecting those that came forward. They were incredibly brave, incredibly open, and we respect the pain that they probably went through all over again.
Once you've decided to not be transparent with this stuff, that's the best answer from among a lot of bad answers, to go and hide behind the women again.
Yes.
To hide behind the women when you're calling in a league that calls for accountability at all turns and tends to punish its players and shame its players or coaches and employees, Stugatz, because Deflategate was Belichick and Brady. They'll do it to the employees. It becomes far less comfortable when it's the owners and you realize that Goodell works for Snyder. And so the punishments have to be cosmetic.
But applauding people who stepped up and were honest, and I think he called them brave. No, bravery is saying it and then allowing the NFL to release, hey, this is what this person said.
No, because
you're off there. If they ask for anonymity, I do think that that's something that you have to respect.
No. However, I'm not saying you shouldn't respect it. I'm saying is there really bravery in stepping up and saying something to an investigator that you know will never get out to the public?
Well, you don't know that last part. That last part seems to be the question here. But there is plenty of bravery in recalling some of the trauma you experience in a hostile work environment. It's also that second part that you said is important, because that was a good answer under the conditions. However, it might have been a dishonest answer from Roger Goodell, because Lisa Banks, who tweeted, I represent 40 former employees of the Washington football team who participated in this investigation. Goodell's statement is false. If that's true, then you're protecting Dan Snyder over the victims.
My point is that once you've decided, and they've decided, to not show anyone anything, you have to now choose, when that question gets asked, what are you going to say?
Mm-hmm.
And what he chose to say is, it was important to us to protect the privacy of the people who are coming forth with the allegations. And what I'm telling you is that's the best cosmetic answer he can come up with from among all bad choices. Once you've made the decision, we're not going to be transparent about this,
right,
and show you again what's happening here is employees, they will shame. Even if, Stugatz, we can agree, and we've talked about some of this before, what happened to the Patriots, going after the Patriots as cheaters, you might think is not good for the brand. But a lot of attention, a lot of talk about your league, soap opera, all that stuff is fine when you're shaming the people who don't actually have the power. And that includes Belichick. So they've got power. They just don't have the kind of power to manipulate the press conference and the investigation the way they can on Goodell.
You can protect anonymity. That's a hard word. Anonymity.
You want to keep trying?
You can protect.
Oh, no, hold on. Go back and forth. Go back and forth with Stugatz on that word.
Stugatz.
Anonymity. You can protect the anonymity.
Anonymity.
You can protect the anonymity of the women who came forward and still be transparent. That's like a logical fallacy, saying you can't do both at the same time. Like, we just saw this with the Blackhawks investigation yesterday. They used John Doe and pseudonyms for people who didn't want their names out there.
It wouldn't be very hard to redact some names when you're a multi-billion dollar organization that does a pretty good job of concealing things when you want them concealed, but it does them no good. My argument would be on Deflategate and Belichick and Brady, Stugatz, my argument would be that that wasn't actually bad for business. It was bad for the Patriots, but it wasn't bad for the business of the NFL. Deflategate, Ted Wells, spend millions of dollars, stay in the news stream, create a team that's more hated, more loved, controversial, polarizing champion, interesting champion. It's not actually bad for the league in empirical ways that cost you dollars, but go ahead and make it something scandalous right. That makes FedEx do more than make Dan Snyder take that name off the team, because everyone starts pulling out. Once you saw what happened to Gruden, you saw how he lost all of a sudden, the sponsors, everyone vanishes. And when you're that close to the money's going to get protected by an investigative arm that is paid by the money.
But it's absurd that we know more about PSI and how to handle a football than we do about what goes into a hostile workplace. We know that it's a hostile workplace. We don't know what the NFL defines as a hostile workplace from this. It's a clown show.
But not as serious as Dan pointed out, even though you're attacking, you're going after, you know, a cathedral, one of your best players in Tom Brady there, but it wasn't bad for business. This is a totally different story.
I disagree.
Oh, no,
it
Mike,
was certainly
that was
bad for business from ESPN's standpoint. ESPN is hated in New England. The NFL management, Roger Goodell, is hated in New England. I don't know how that actually manifests in terms of dollars, but it certainly hurts in terms of perception.
Right.
Like, these are brands that were pretty immaculate in that region, and now they're not.
Not perception that costs you dollars, though, which is the perception they care about, which is why the NFL does, after Kaepernick, one day to the other, says, hey, we got it wrong on Kaepernick, never mind about all that. Perception, optics are the only thing that matter here. Because the reality of it is, not perception, the reality of it is this is a giant business protected by all of the things that protect corporate interests.
Mike, those were conversations people wanted to have. It might have not been good for, you know, Belichick and ESPN in certain places, but that was an easy conversation, deflating footballs that people were willing and wanting to have.
If they care about optics, why are the optics of this so bad?
Oh, because the optics that would be revealed with transparency are deeply, deeply worse.
Much worse?
This is the best of their options.
They're taking inventory?
I keep saying yeah. The important...
But then that's a cover-up.
The important part of the phrase here is, if you're insistent on nobody ever gets to see this, yes, the starting thing is a cover-up. That's what it is. It's
you don't want people to see it.
They're actively covering something up.
Look, man, if you were actually trying to punish something here, you didn't take Daniel Snyder's team. You moved him off to the side and fined him $10 million, and he's still around everything that you're doing. What did you do? You did optics. That all they care about is what gets us the best look. And in this circumstance, the worst look is us getting to see the inner workings of Snyder's organization. There's nothing worse than that. There's nothing that can happen. You check with your PR crisis team. You check with all of the people who do market research on this stuff and let you handle scandal and crisis. And there will be nothing worse than us seeing whatever it is that their investigation actually turned up.
Yeah, I think the optics that they're okay with is that we don't really have any say in if there's bad workplaces in the NFL. We're not going to be held accountable to that. So if this happens again, maybe people won't come forward. Like, that's the message that they're sending, right? If you're a woman or anyone working in any of these clubs right now, and you have a similar story to these women, you're making that decision. Should I come forward about this, or nothing will happen? So I won't.
I want to be clear, Stugatz, on something that you were doing there, because I don't know the nature of what the accusations are, because it's not transparent. You don't think that there is bravery in whistleblowing?
We know that.
No.
We know that some topless photos of cheerleaders were circulated. We know that from the John Gruden story. We don't. But where is it? Where is that? I mean, there is bravery in someone that had a topless photo being circulated, talking to someone about that invasive trauma.
There is bravery in stepping up and saying something. If I was one of the victims, I probably would want this to come out because I wanted to get fixed. I want people to know What's I'd be willing to waive that is what I'm trying to say.
But Stugatz, one of the
things. No, because I want the football team exposed. I want Daniel Snyder exposed.
Two different things.
But if you're just a witness to it and you weren't one of the victims, but you witnessed some of it.
No, because you get death threats. Like, your life's ruined. Like, this is what the victims who Jenny Vrentis has been reporting on have said about the Deshaun Watson accusations. Like, there are small business owners and their small businesses have been severely impacted. Like, their livelihoods have been impacted. They feel like they're being threatened. Like, there's a security threat because people are so rabid and angry about the things that they've said.
I have been floored of the last couple of months of interviews that we've done about whether it's USA Gymnastics or whatever else it is, that when women come forward on this stuff, the systems push back in a way that make them victims yet again, that make them. And so the deterrents are so strong and so ever present and so structurally what the organization is doing, that there is difficulty in telling the truth to investigators about a place that you might yourself love because of fandom or thought it was a dream job or work for people who control your careers after that. And I just can't believe that we're going to quietly not see any of this, that they're going to get away with it.
I can't believe it. I gotta think that there's some investigators that are going to be poking around on this investigation even more. Like, we already saw it happened with the Wall Street Journal stuff already leaked out. Is that the end of it? Is Daniel Snyder going to presumably get away with this?
Am I the only one fascinated by the fact that the world's second richest man might want the Washington football team and has a journalistic arm, one of the few in America with the resources?
It's fascinating
to actually put this out there, unless you want to join the boys club where they don't want it out there.
But you're kind of like alleging that Bezos has a say in what the Washington Post sports editors are like assigning and investigating. And I know some people that work there, and I don't think that's the case.
No,
if Bezos calls and tells you to do something, there's a good chance your
journalistic integrity and independence are completely out the window.
This is the Washington Post.
This is
Washington
Post. What she is saying,
journalistic integrity matters there.
What she is saying is entirely accurate. There is a separation in the best newsrooms. There are fewer and fewer of them now, between commerce and content. The publisher is supposed to stay out of that stuff. But I have no earthly idea what Bezos thinks about journalism, and I have no earthly idea what it means to have that kind of power and money and want a football team.
But I think the reporters themselves have integrity. Like, I don't know any of, like, a lot. I don't know them all personally. I'm not vouching for every single reporter there, but I am saying,
getting to,
like,
the bottom of this is not like, a...
But Jessica, you're saying something here. Hey, investigate that more is a perfectly valid thing for the Washington Post to be doing.
Right, so Bezos would be telling them to do something they're not already doing on their own.
It's a hypothetical. I know nothing about Jeff Bezos outside of he wants to reverse the aging process and go to space and he's super rich and he just had a divorce. I don't know. I know where Elon Musk stands on the media. I don't know where Jeff Bezos stands on
the media.
He can
get his thing in 2 days, too.
Yeah.
Except emails, apparently.
And that'll close that.
Quenneville is meeting with Bettman tomorrow in New York.
Okay.
Yeah, just so you guys know.
Glad they're doing it sooner rather than later. Well, all right, that's the end of hour two.
Do they play there? Is that a convenience thing, Roy?
I believe they play in Detroit on Friday. Okay.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer cals and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.